to introduce our speaker tonight. He comes all the way from the greater metropolis area of Fresno, California. He's on his own dime. We didn't have any expenses to cover. Maybe you can talk to Ryan. He has a sobriety date of October 12, 2007, which means he just celebrated 7 years. Is that correct? 7 years. Ready to go on that? And I want to introduce Sean A. from Fresno.
All right. I'm going to go back and I want Phil to reintroduce me.
You're okay.
All right. Guys, my name is Sean, and I am a recovered alcoholic from Fresno, California. And by the grace of God, I'm here celebrating my seventh year of sobriety. This is my second time here. I think my first time here was with my sponsor, Tyler. He's up in Eureka now. So this is a fun group. I love you guys. And you guys are animated, excited, and it's fun to see AA like this over here, if I tell you. So, you know, I'm not an eloquent speaker, and I don't have, I speak really quick. And so if I talk too fast, slow me down, guys. And I have a little bit of ADD, so if I start to go off on a bunny trail, I'll come back around to it eventually. It just might be towards the end of what I'm trying to say. Is that okay, guys? Just want to give you guys a rest. All right. So, you know, it was in a seat just like this, the Salvation Army, 2007, downtown Skid Row in L.A., and I heard a message that changed my life forever. And it was a guy just like me. I think he had 5 years at the time, and he said something that struck me, and there was an attraction to what he said, and I wanted it. And it was something about you'll never have to feel like this and drink like this ever again. You know, you'll never have this phenomenon of craving, this you know, that 3 day hump when you can't get over it, and you can get over the first 2 days, and that third day comes, and that urge to drink is too strong, and you just wind up giving in time and time and time again. He said, there's this method that I have. I didn't come up with it. It's just a set of instructions, and I can do these, and I'll never have to do that ever again. And I was at a place in my life where I literally would have done anything. You know, God gives us that gift of desperation. And so thank God that I heard that message at that time, because that's what saved my life. So hopefully something I say here to you guys tonight will touch you the same way that it touched me. Whether you're a newcomer, whether you got 10 days, I don't know what it is that you have, but hopefully something that you hear will strike you. And if it does, ask me about it. I'd love to fill you in more at the end. So basically, I grew up in a household that alcoholism was very prevalent. My dad was the type of alcoholic that the Big Book talks about, the same type that I am, that type that is unable to give it up. You know, they basically give a sufficient reason they can't take it or leave it alone, you know. The hard drinker, they're able to take it and leave it alone, but that real alcoholic, no matter what the consequences are, they just, for whatever reason, they can't give it up. So when I was 2 years old, my dad was given a choice, and he said, hey, the doctor said, hey, you know, if you drink anymore, you're done. And he drank and he died. So, I grew up from a very young age, everybody telling me you can't drink because, you know what, your dad was an alcoholic, and chances are you're going to be an alcoholic, and by the way, your mom's an alcoholic, so you got this thing called a genetic bullet, you know, and you got it from all angles, and you're probably going to wind up just like them. And I remember telling everybody, no, that's not going to be me. I'm going to do things completely different, right? I remember seeing my mom's boyfriend, you know, as he shot up and OD'd in front of the Lucky liquor store, and I'm, you know, 5 or 6 years old, and I'm like seeing this guy flipping out on the curb and not knowing what's going on, but finding out later. I remember telling myself, I'm never going to be like that guy ever. I'm never going to wind up like that. And I remember the very first time that actually came to my periphery, that, man, I'm just like that guy, you know? And I found out, you know, through my inventory, I found out in these rooms that, man, I'm just like my dad in every single way. I'm just like my mom mom in every single way. I'm just like every one of them. And it wasn't because of the things that I did. I had to identify on one level, which was I had to identify on how I drank and what it did to me when I did drink. And so I want to touch on that throughout this, because if there's anything you identify with me, I don't want you to identify with me on what happened, the war stories. I want you to identify with me on what happened to you once you put that drink in. What happened to you before you put that drink in. And hopefully if you're identified with that, then this is a solution that you can use as well. My first drink with alcohol was at 5 years old. And my mom's boyfriend would give me strawberry daiquiris. And I didn't know what alcohol really was at the time, and I wasn't drinking to get drunk. But man, I loved the effect it produced. And I remember I was riding my skateboard, and I was in front of everybody, and us alcoholics, we love attention, right? And so I was the center of attention at the time, and I remember I was trying to ride my skateboard this way, but my feet kept going this way, and it felt fuzzy, and I don't know what it was, but man, it felt great, right? And I kept going back for more and more and more, and so I got cut off. And again, identify with that in this program, because it takes me through the steps, and they help you identify with the allergy. And I can see that, man, I went back for more and more and more at a young age of this alcohol. It did something to me. It wasn't up here. It was in my body, right? It did something to me different than the Kool-Aid did, than the water did, because I didn't go back to thirds and fourths and fifths of the Kool-Aid, you know. But for some reason, the strawberry daiquiri was doing something for me, right? Fast forward to 10 years old, I had my next drink. You know, my grandpa liked wild turkey, and I'd wait for him to go to sleep, right? At 10 years old, you don't sit there and wait for everybody to go to sleep, right? Until you can go ahead and sneak in, unless you're a real alcoholic. So, as soon as I heard the door close and I waited enough time, I'd sneak into that liquor cabinet, and I'd grab some wild turkey, and I'd sit there in the dark and make sure the lights were off because I didn't want to wake anybody. And I'd take 3 or 4 shots, you know, and I'd do that time and time again at 10 years old. You know, and I remember at nighttime, I couldn't wait for that time to come where I could go sneak those shots, right? Phenomenon of craving, mental obsession. Coming into 16, where the wheels kind of fell off, and, you know, my disease was full bore, and couldn't really go to class. I basically dropped out of high school. Got my high school diploma at a continuation school at the very last second. Didn't have any plans. Life wasn't looking too bright for me, right? But I was that type of kid that everybody said, man, you got so much potential, right? You got potential, you can do this, you can do that, you can do that. But why couldn't I ever pull it together, you know? And I couldn't really figure that out. And to be honest with you, for the next 8 years, I didn't pull it together. For the next 8 years, I kind of did the same thing. And just kind of meandered around life. I got hooked into drugs, and my malady took me to a couple other places. And next thing you know, that kid is sitting there saying, I'm never going to be like that. I'm looking at, you know, jail time, and I'm on Skid Row. Broke, homeless, and living in Skid Row. You know, and has anybody ever seen Skid Row downtown L.A.?
Yeah.
Is it a fun place?
No.
But is it a place where you wind up where you said, man, I'm never going to be like that? That's exactly what happened to me. But again, let's come in full circle, you know, it was in that place that I heard my sponsor, Tyler, share the message at AA. And he said there was a couple requirements that I needed to come into with this. And the first requirement is I got to give up all my ideas, all these things I think I know, right? Because I come in with this huge ego, and I think I know all these things, and I think that I got all this stuff figured out. I know exactly how it's going to work because somehow, delusionally, it worked last time, but it didn't. You know, and so that was the first thing I got to do, you know, and the second thing I got to do, I got to believe that a higher power, something bigger than me, can take me to a place that I've never been before. And thirdly, I got to start and I got to finish. And I got to believe that power that brought me here to help start will help me finish if I'm tapped into that power. And so that was it. And he told me, if I'm willing to do those things, then I'm going to see the results that he's talking about, right? And so from a guy who's sitting here on Skid Row, completely just broken, I mean, I got nothing left. Nothing left of me. If I wasn't such a coward, I would have killed myself. But I never could, you know, follow through with it. I could dream it up, but as soon as it came to doing it, I just couldn't do it. I hit that with I hit it with so much passion and so much effort. We got straight into the first step, and I worked all my steps aside from my amends right from the get-go in a matter of 3 months. And I wrote 300 pages of inventory, and I did everything he asked me to do. And as a result, I got some serious, serious blessings in my life. And to this day, I can tell you right now that for the last 7 years, I haven't had a want, need, desire to drink whatsoever. I'm telling you right now, it hasn't even crossed my mind that I'm going to drink. Oh man, I'm going to drink. I better stay away from that. It's been removed. God has removed the obsession from me. And that's the story. That was what attracted me to this program. That he told me that this thing could be completely removed from my life. And so, going back to Skid Row, couldn't work my amends, but he kept telling me that was where the freedom was at in this program. Was working my amends, right? I'm gonna really get a gut punch with my inventory if I do it right. Look at myself, which is really hard to do sometimes. But as soon as I get into the amends, is where I'm going to get some freedom. But it's not really the freedom I get for me; the freedom I give others that eventually just happens, you know, on my side. So as soon as I got back to Fresno, which was tough because I had to come around all the same friends, you know, all the old buddies that I used to use with, you know, I had to repair all these relationships that I had broken. And that was hard for me because even though my ego was smashed, there was still a little bit left. I didn't want to go through that, you know, coming up to somebody and saying, dude, I robbed you, or I stole from you, or mom, all that time you were having trouble paying your bills is because I take all your money. You know, whatever that was that I had to repay. And then top of that, you know, I got these ideas and I'm going to get the girlfriend back and I'm going to somehow get a job and all these things that have come in, and I got a driver's license and I got all these things. So coming back to Fresno was where the real test was, you know. Because when I was way over there at Salvation Army in Skid Row, I was safe and protected. As you know, I didn't really have a whole lot of life I had to live. I just had to worry about programming. But coming back to Fresno was a tough gig because I'm like, how am I going to make it? You know, I got a lot of things against me here. But that's where God came in this program, and that's where you in this program came in and helped me out. The fellowship of this program. And right from the get-go, I had so many people in my home group come and help me get a job, find a place to live, help me pick my head up when my head was hanging down, and basically help me get to a place where I could go ahead and start living something called life, you know? And again, the one thing that helped me more than anything was working the steps with other guys. You know, the book talks about nothing's going to help me get through these low times than working with others, you know? And so I look back in hindsight and I'm like, how in the world did I stay sober through all this, you know? Because not only have I been through some bad relationships. Anybody here been in some bad relationships in sobriety? Yeah. No. So I bring all my baggage with me, you know, and she brings her baggage with her, and you know, and has some AA relationships that worked out great. and so you know, you look back on that, and you look back on some of the decisions that you make, because it's once you get sober, it's not like all of a sudden things get better, you know, and you make all the right decisions all of a sudden. You know, you still make some bad decisions, you just make them sober, you know. And so I look back on some of these things, and man, I wish I could say that I've done this program 100% perfect, and I'm, you know, AA spokesperson. Man, I've made some bad mistakes. But the hard part, as long as you're the easy part, if your ego smashed enough, the hard part is once you've been in this program and you start to do some things, your ego starts to get a little bigger, it starts to grow itself, it's harder to go back and make those amends that you need to make, you know, and so, and those are the things that separate me from God. You know, those things that I'm just not willing to come to terms with, right? And so I say about 3 years into this program, I had a real gut check, you know, and I had a split in the road, which way was I going to go? And I had to go with my ego and say, man, I got this. I haven't had any issue with alcohol for a while, right? Or I could say, man, if everything they're saying is true, I better stick with it, because the fact is, if I take this left path, I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't want to go back where I came from, right? And I hope that's not God's plan for me ever, but you know, the truth is that these things happen, you know, and again, you know, when that low spot came in AA where, you know, I was a dry drunk. You know, I was sitting here 100% sober, but 100% hurting. And I was dying inside, and my malady was just eating me up. And I was kind of just a shell of a man walking around just sober with no solution. You know, and alcohol was my solution, you know, to all my issues. And so what do I do at that point, right? And I'll tell you, if there's one thing that you can lean back on, again, it's getting in front of another alcoholic. And that's exactly what I did. So I got the service right off the get-go, and just immediately you feel the changes, right? And immediately I felt the changes, and all of a sudden I'm back running, and that's the thing that just catapulted me into that next dimension they're talking about, the fourth dimension. It catapults you into another level. So if there's anybody here that's suffering, man, I'm telling you what, get in front of an alcoholic is the greatest thing ever. And even if you have like 5 days, you know, get in front of somebody that's got like 1 day. But, you know, working with others has been my passion. And, you know, this last year, two years ago, I got married. I had a child in sobriety. I got a 10-month-old. And, you know, I have a dream job. I have all these things. I'm like, I don't know. I don't deserve any of these things, because how does a guy like me get these things, right? I'm not trying to sell myself short. It's just the statistics, you know. It is the statistics. Guys like myself, we don't get to have the lives that we have. You know, you take a detour sometimes, and you kind of put some distance between you and this program. And I'll just tell you from experience right now that the number one thing that happens is when I start to put this program up on a shelf, I'm just going to lay it out right now. I'm talking to you guys from a level of where I've been since I decided that I'm going to put some time into my family more so than AA, which is important to you guys. But what happens is the level of meetings I start to go to declines. The number of drunks I start to talk to declines. The number amount of time that I start to spend with God declines. And what happens is all those things, that three-part disease, you got the malady, you got the obsession, you got the allergy that kicks in, that malady will start working and start manifesting, and you can see it in the bedevilments, right? Does anybody understand the bedevilments of AA? The bedevilments of the malady, right? I'm irritable, restless, discontent. Can't seem to be of any real help to anybody. Can't seem to make a living. All those things, full of misery, depression. You start to see those things trickle in. So I'm here to tell you right now that, you know, the last 2 months, I started to see those things trickle in. And thank God that I'm hooked up to God enough right now that to see those things and to say, you know what, right now is the time for me to go ahead and put full force back into AA, because that is where my salvation lies. That's where my peace, my future, everything lies. And so, you know, 7 years in, your ego starts to rebuild itself big time, and you start to turn off to those things that are important. And, you know, I was listening to Mark Houston, who's, I don't know if any of you guys know who Mark H is. He passed away, but man, he's an amazing speaker, and I was listening to him on the way here. And he was talking about his same experience. There seems to be this 7-8 year hump where the ego has rebuilt itself to a point where you think you know what you got to do for a little bit, right? And sometimes, you know, when Bill calls you out of the blue and says, hey, why don't you come share? And you say, oh, man, I haven't been really doing everything the way I should be doing lately. And it kind of kickstarts you. So it's kind of a God thing that Bill called me. But I am here to tell you that I've worked the steps 4 times in a row. Page 1 through 164. I've written 4 inventories. I've done these things over and over again, and I've seen some truth. But just as if I'm not living on the food I ate 2 weeks ago, I can't be living on the experience that I had last year. I need to have a new experience. And that's what this program is about. And if there's anybody here who hasn't had the opportunity to step away from AA and see where your life goes, try it out, see where it works. You know, everything on the inside might be looking great, or on the outside might be looking great, but the fact is you're starting to feel a little unrestless, or a little restless on the inside. And so I think the opportunity, I'm so thankful for the opportunity to come here and expose myself on that level, because you guys are where I belong. This is where I belong, in this room. This is where it all started for me. you know, and I owe my life to this seat, to these seats, to you people, to this God and this program, because without it, I wouldn't be able to have a wife and a family and all the amazing things that I have today. So I know I haven't touched on a lot of things, but man, I'm just really grateful to be here, guys, and I hope that anything I said touches you in some way, shape, or form. So with that, you come back.
All right, go on.
Clothes out of the laundry or out of the dryer. There for 3 years. Glass, fifth and Gladys. Fifth and Gladys.
Yep.
Right on the nickel. It smells like urine, deuces. Yeah, it's just about everything you can think.
How's your experience with Forza? Have you had more than one, and has that been
cooler? Yeah, absolutely. I see a lot more selfishness. I see more selfishness every time I go through it. So the very first time I did it with Joe and Charlie Sheet. I don't know if you guys know Joe and Charlie Sheet, but it's not very thorough at all. The second time I did it, I looked at... where was I selfish? Who was I hurt? I looked at so many things. I did actual sex inventory, and then I did a fear inventory for the first time, which was eye-opening, because I get to see that all my root, I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't done it, but all my root problems come from me being in the control, you know, and I want to be in control of everything, and I have a fear of not knowing how that's going to turn out. And so, anyway.
Okay,
so. Yeah, the whole thing does. And I was the only white guy in the whole entire area, so I stuck out just for a time. Yeah, and six this month. Yeah, I was on meth. Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot for clarifying that one, but no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, lost my balance, absolutely. I'd say somewhere in the lines of 6 years, you know, when life changed and I got a whole family, instant family, you know, and she came in with an 11-year-old. Any of my character defects that I thought I'd gotten rid of that God had taken were pretty much exposed. Surprise! And so, as a result, resentment starts to build in. And when I'm not doing my 10th, 11th, and looking at my resentments on a daily basis, those things start to pile up on me. You know, and when those things start to pile up on you, next thing you know, that gap between me and God starts to get a little bit wider. You know, and if God is the key to this whole entire thing, right? God's what gives me the power to stay sober, but it's the spiritual fitness that I got to maintain that continues that sobriety. I got a part in it as well. It's not just, you know, the first page says, hey, God keeps you sober, but closed, and that's it, right? It's a matter of all the work I got to put in. So what happens is as my head says, well, no, the book says that a further demonstration is to be done in our families, too, shown in our families, so might as well just go ahead and camp out there for a little bit, right? But what happens is you camp out there just a little bit too long. Yeah, this is demonstration, but that demonstration is showing love and peace and kindness, and this program really works, and altruism and all a ton of other things. You know, it's not about just I'm going to camp out with my family every day, all day, and never do the program again. You know, that's where the balance comes from. Go ahead.
So what I hear you saying is that what you learn to do pretty much is do a really thorough fourth and fifth every day, that you just continually do it in that fourth and fifth.
I wish I could do a fourth and fifth every day, but you kind of do a little mini fourth step in your 10th and 11th. Right? So doing the 10th and 11th diligently on an everyday basis is what clears out all the clutter, right? Because ultimately we're trash cans, we got full of trash, and the inventory takes everything, pours everything out, and we learn to put the good stuff in, keep the bad stuff out, right? But if I don't have that checks and balances and I'm not keeping the bad stuff out, then what happens is it builds up, and it's really easy for us to go ahead and again camp out with our family and say, this is where I'm supposed to be, this is where God wants me to be, which it might. But he also gave you sobriety, and he also gave you a life to live that requires you to be of service to your fellow, to be given away what was freely given to you today. Yeah, exactly. Has anybody ever come up here and share a bad story? No, she's not. She's normal. Yeah. I don't know how she puts that with me, but yeah, she's normal. I don't know. Thanks, I appreciate it.
You said,
Tim, you had a question?
You said that it was important for you to be part of AA and the service and all of the other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you also said it was important for you to be at home and be responsible for your family. And you didn't say this, but you said you had a job, and I assume that you've got to probably get the job too, right?
Correct.
And you probably have to do things to take care of your physical health, right?
Yeah, that's kind of, I got a belly here, so that's debatable.
I guess where I'm going with this is it sounds like you've got a lot of stuff to do. Maybe you ought to get out of here now and get to it.
No, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
My question is, how do you propose to find the right balance of all of those things? How are you going to find that balance?
That's a good question, you know, and that's where some of the unmanageability kicks in, because it's really easy. I don't know if you guys are doing the same thing, but it's really easy to put blame on everybody else, right? Well, I would be able to do this if you would do this, right? If you would just, you know, we get into this whole I need everybody else to be a certain way for me to be okay thing. And that's where I see a little unmanageability on myself creeping in is I start to put too much responsibility on others for them to be responsible for my responsibilities. You know, and if there's anything this program teaches us, it's to be responsible for ourselves, right? And for our actions and for our things. And so I notice that when I am doing the things God's asking me to do, those things balance out a lot easier. So then I'll give you a 30-second or a 30-minute speech to answer your question. It really starts with my prayer and my meditation. You know, it starts with asking God to do the things for me that I can't do for myself, which is that energy, that willingness. You know, we talk about fruits of the Spirit, right? Fruits of this program. What are the fruits of this program? Sobriety and love. And, man, what's this program based on? Right? We get to love and open up our hearts like we've never loved and opened up our hearts before, because most of us are pretty unloving people, right? You know, and we're hard to love and that. So anyway, that's basically the answer to the question. So.
Yeah.